What is up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and my co-host Thomas Strantz. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Lots to get into today. Another Canucks game day. Some other news and notes to take care of. Of course, another big helping of rumors from around the NHL as it concerns the Vancouver Canucks. So what's going on, Drance?
Seconds of rumors.
Yes, absolutely.
Seconds of rumors at Aliza, apparently.
Yes, we'll get probably Aliza. I don't know. Was the actual restaurant named?
No.
This is a fair guess, though.
Wow, you're really like standing Blue Water here. Don't forget the Seafood Tower. Drance, come on. You don't know?
Honest, I've been to Blue Water. I've never been to Aliza, so there you go.
Fair enough. You know
what? I don't know. But I'm sure it's great. Anyways, yes, so lots to get into there, and they do play the Buffalo Sabres tonight at Rogers Arena.
Sick free advertising we're giving out on this program, by the way.
Well, whatever. That's fine. I mean,
it's like, I should get to my reads, but I've already done some for Top Table.
I'm trying to get those Aliza gift cards. That's what I'm going for here. I think I'm going to have to wait a while for that. As mentioned, we got to the game to tee up tonight, some suspension news to take care of. We've got the Canucks quarter century team named by the NHL. We can talk about that at some point. We'll talk to Paul Hamilton, Sabres reporter from WGR Radio in Buffalo at 1 o'clock. But let's go right now to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 21st. We'll start with some headlines, and I guess headline number one at this point is pretty straightforward. It's JT Miller, still a member of the Vancouver Canucks. Still a Canuck.
Well, and he took skate, which he always does.
Yeah.
JT Miller, steel always hits the ice on a game day. It didn't on Saturday. Right? Like, if you're looking for a data point that tells you this is real, at this point, you're sticking your head in the sand if you don't believe that this is real. But certainly when I got in and got tipped off Saturday that something might be up, the first thing I did was text all my colleagues who were at the rink, JT Miller not on the ice. That's when I started to take it a little more seriously. Still not seriously enough, as it turned out. So JT Miller took morning skate. Still a member of the Vancouver Canucks. We are now in the waiting game.
Yes, and we'll have more on that.
Yeah, bookmark that.
Yeah, as the show goes on. But for now, at least, and looks likely to participate tonight unless something changes in a hurry, JT Miller still a Vancouver Canuck. I should also mention, before we get to the actual game, we'll tie this one up. Tyler Myers and Connor McDavid both suspended 3 games after their cross-checks, their respective cross-checks on Saturday. And I got to admit,
I'm just glad that Connor McDavid survived the light snuggling.
I got to be honest.
Received.
Like, I get it. It's the best player in the league.
I don't get it.
No, no, no.
There's
always going to be a certain amount of volume, but like,
no,
here's
this
what
is ridiculous.
Hold on. Here's what happened. Two guys cross-checked other players in the face at the end of the game, and then they got suspended 3 games for it.
Seems reasonable.
Done. End of story. All of the I don't even get what people are like angry about. Why has there been this much conversation, this much emotion, this much anger about what is a very straightforward NHL story? Two dudes cross-checked other players in the face and got suspended 3 games. Done. What are we talking about?
I think we're up to like 11 or 12 of these two over the last couple of years. Like, these are consistently suspended.
These are by the book.
Very straightforward. And yeah, I mean, the funniest part to me is the conversation being like, the league has to protect McDavid.
Yeah, as if his life was in jeopardy.
This was a cynical move by Connor Garland. You know what I mean? This wasn't taking liberties with a star player. This was like more Roger Nielsen than Todd Bertuzzi. This was more like outthinking the rule book. You know, if the conversation is something like, if a player is held in this manner, should the referees be able to stop the puck even with the offensive team in possession? Should there be discretion to the referees? Is there a type of eliminating a player late in a game that we want to award a penalty shot on to provide like addition. Like if that was the discussion point, I think that would be a reasonable discussion point.
Yeah.
Protecting me. No liberties were taken.
No.
McDavid was taking the liberties.
He was not in danger at any point. Like, there was no threat to his body here. Oh, my God, we got to protect your stars. It's like, the comparison to Patrick Mahomes, it's like, first of all, a lot of people are frustrated with that. Second of all, it's because you don't want your quarterback taking a shot to the head, which could leave him concussed. That's not what we're talking about here with Connor McDavid.
Yeah, also, honestly, they've gone so far toward overprotecting the quarterback that as we saw, Patrick Mahomes dove massively to try and draw a flag and earn a first down in the red zone just over the weekend. And, like, it was beyond dishonorable to the point that football fans are furious about it.
And to the point the broadcasters were furious
about it. Yeah, they were calling him out.
Carving him.
I love Troy Aikman. Anyway. I honestly have no idea how, you know, and he shouldn't participate in the Four Nations. He shouldn't do anything for the league.
Yeah.
It's like, what's wrong with you people?
I don't get that at all.
They have lost their marbles.
He gets a week off in January. What is the outrage here?
No, this conversation.
I don't get it.
Like, I can't figure out what's going on beyond that. Like, they've been, it's like the entire Edmonton market has been infected with a certain mania. And I like to think that it's karma for enjoying all the times the Twins got mugged over the course of their careers. It's like, you guys have the two most skilled players in hockey and they've been there for 5 years and this is new to you?
Yeah.
You're shocked by this?
The idea that this is like some injustice that he needs to protest in some way. It honestly is the kind of thing where maybe I'm naive for thinking it wouldn't be like this, but it's like, have people just started watching hockey this season? Like, what's going on? This is just normal NHL stuff.
And by the way, if you're saying, hey, the league needs to do more to create space for skilled players, I agree. And by the way, I think we've actually gone in that direction, but not because of the league, but because skilled players have gotten so good at beating goaltenders that they've created that environment for themselves. The amount of penalties that MacKinnon and McDavid are drawing is embarrassing. And I saw an Oilers fan tweet sort of how it's trended. Like how his penalty rates have trended over the course of his career. And it's very clear to me that whenever the Oilers are really good, McDavid doesn't draw penalties. And whenever the Oilers are bad, he draws more penalties. And that's that game management stuff that we all know. Like, we all know, oh, that home team's trailing by one in the third. We all know they're getting a power play opportunity in the last 10 minutes. That's the stuff we should be upset about.
Yeah.
Right. The idea of like figuring out how to, cause what Connor Garland did, like, we don't want that. I loved it in the moment. Mm-hmm. It was genius chicanery, but we don't want that. The league shouldn't want that. So I think there's a reasonable discussion about how do you officiate the last 10 seconds? Because why wouldn't if 5-6 seconds, why doesn't every player just take out every player? I'd never sort of thought about it until now, but it's like everyone take out everyone and then no one touch the puck. Like, there is actually a discussion point to be had that there's probably something that should be done there.
Yeah, look, I'm always up for a round of questioning how the NHL officiates things, right? Like, I'm always up for that. But to frame it around, like, protecting McDavid. He needs to be protected out there from this outlandish behavior. And the idea that, this is outrageous. He's been suspended for 3 games. Like, I don't know, man. I just don't get it.
And he was viciously targeted by a hold.
By the way,
my God.
We'll hear from Tockett later in the show.
I'm more viciously targeted when I come home when my puppy greets me.
And jumps up on you.
Yeah. And like, oh, no.
Someone's got to step in and protect you from that.
Seriously.
We'll hear from Rick Tockett later, but this quote per Batch just popped up on my feed. So Rick Tockett, this is from Batch. Rick Tockett hits back at the, quote, grandstanding around McDavid's suspension, says he doesn't like people sitting on their couches criticizing Wes McCauley and George Parris.
Who is this?
This is Rick Tockett saying this, which I love that Rick Tockett is like, here's a chance for me to stand up for the refs. He loves doing it. He loves complimenting the refs. He's like, I can get in on this and remind everyone how much I love the refs.
I don't, by the way, I think this is a top-down issue and always have, right? Like, I think the way the league has determined the game
should be
officiated.
Clearly the leg tolerates it, or otherwise they do something about it.
I would have liked to see a hand go up there, but for me, that's not it's not inconsistent with how the game is officiated more widely, and I think there's a discussion to be had about that. The game management stuff, certainly the creating space for star players stuff. You know, I think there's a lot that we can talk about in terms of that and have productive conversations and productive grounds to criticize the league. I just think if we're talking about protecting Connor McDavid because he got held, that's a fundamental misunderstanding of like what matters here and what actually happened.
And the length of the suspension as well. Anyway, they got matching suspensions.
I'm
whatever.
Bored of this topic, so let's move on.
I was baffled at the amount of conversation. Anyways, quickly teeing up this one tonight against the Sabres.
Oh, sorry. Well, there's another headline.
Yeah, it's the Sabres. What is it? What are you doing?
There's another one.
Okay.
The Vancouver Canucks all quarter century team
was
named.
I was going to save that for later, but we can do it now.
Yeah, let's do it now quick.
All right. So it is.
It's a game against Buffalo.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
The team might trade JT Miller. These games barely matter. Like, what are we talking about?
So they do matter is the weird
thing. I know. They really do.
That's the weird part of it. Anyways.
But they also, like, right now, they feel kind of like a sideshow.
Yeah. So obviously, the NHL rolling this out for every team in the league over the course of the season. They're quarter century team, and there's two sets. First team, second team here today was the Canucks' turn. So it's not center and wingers and left winger, right winger. It's three forwards, two defensemen, and
although
the
both lines have enough like guys who can play the wing that you're fine.
Yes. Don't worry, guys. They'll be fine.
They're
not short on wingers.
Unfortunately, we have one pair with two lefties.
Oh, brutal. Anyways, so first team is obviously the Sedins, of course.
Yep.
Marcus Naslund, Quinn Hughes, Alex Edler and Roberto Luongo, and I would say four of those at least were mortal locks. I think Naslund was a no-brainer also.
No, Naslund's the one you don't think was a mortal lock?
I'm just saying, I think he's a no-brainer, but
absolute no-brainer.
I would have had him on there as well, but I think if you polled a lot of other people, that would have been like Sedin.
Who are you polling?
Sedin, Hughes, Luongo.
Are you polling them while catching their drool in a bowl? Marcus Naslund is clearly on the first team.
I agree. I'm not disputing that.
Well, I don't know. You're like, you think he's less of a mortal lock than Alex Edler?
No. Edler's, if you're to rank locks, it's the Sedins. It's
Quinn Hughes and Luongo.
Hughes and Luongo are tied up. Then it's Naslund. Then there's open question about the six. That's
fine.
All I'm saying.
Yeah, that's
all I'm saying.
Okay. Sorry. I'll stop.
Yeah,
getting mad about nothing.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's a lie. You won't, but at least temporarily pause it. Team two, Ryan Kessler, JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Matthias Olland, Kevin Bieksa, and Thatcher Demko. So Miller and Pettersson both make. They're going to have chemistry issues. They're going to have chemistry issues, team two.
And that's more because of Ryan Kessler. Kevin Bieksa reacting to making the second team. Shared on his Instagram story, low key, if second team doesn't kill each other in practice, then we're running first team out of the building. An incredible joke from Kevin Bieksa. Now, I had a vote.
Okay.
I had a vote. I was invited to vote on this in this process. And I suppose I should probably just check to make sure I'm not like lying in figuring out exactly what my ballot was. But my gut is that the biggest snub is Alex Burrows. Yeah, so I had Alex Burrows 5. Like, I didn't just have him on the team. I had him on the team with a bullet. And I had him ahead of Pettersson and Miller. And I thought Pettersson and Miller was a coin flip decision, effectively. And I voted for Pettersson solely because Pettersson was awarded the Calder Trophy. And I think when you're considering, like, what matters in the first 25 years of a century for a hockey team, like, real NHL hardware has to matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quinn Hughes didn't win the Calder.
Nope.
Brock Besser didn't win the Calder. Like, it's hard to win the Calder. You only get one shot. Connor McDavid didn't win the Calder. Tyler Myers did. Sorry, Edmonton. Take that cross-check to the face. Anyway, the truth is that winning a major NHL award, I think, has to matter when we consider the history of the league. He was the best first-year player, and for that reason, I gave him the edge. I think without it, honestly, it literally would have been a pure coin flip. I think it was like a 48% decision. I just think when you consider Alex Burrows, like, you can't tell the story.
Sorry, also, hold on. I just need to interrupt. I'm sorry. This is a quarter century. So since the year 2000.
Yes.
So everyone texting in about
Tony Tanti. Texting Tony Tanti,
Pavel Bure specifically. Pavel Bure is like, that's not relevant here.
At all.
Not relevant.
No. So quarter century team. Since 2000. I got a ride for Alex Burrows here for a couple of reasons. One is I think people are massively ignoring just how dominant his peak was. Like, I think you can argue that his peak was actually higher than Pettersson and Miller's. And I know that sounds wild because when you look at it on the back of a hockey card, you're like, they had 100-point seasons.
Yeah, and they're centers as well.
Totally.
Right? Yep. So there's positional value there.
Sure, I get it. But, like, Alex Burrows was a top across a three-year sample where the Canucks were one of the best teams in the league. In fact, the best team in the league by regular season point percentage. Alex Burrows was like a top five-on-five goal scorer, like really consistently. The other players on that list are like Gabarek, Ovechkin,
yeah.
Stamkos, you know, like Marty St. Louis, like ridiculous goal totals. We're talking about a guy who consistently scored 30-35 at five-on-five while being an elite defensive player and being a player that elevated the best line in hockey across that stretch. I mean, once again, go look at plus-minus leaders, for example, over that sample, and it's like Sedin, Burrows, Chara. Like, nobody was better than those three guys across a three-year span. He also played more games than Pettersson and Miller did. He had more iconic moments. You can't ignore that. And I just think we need to, like, this six-year span for this core, I know there's some recency bias at play, and last season was one of the three or four best seasons in Canucks history, but that Sedin era team did it every year.
Yeah.
Every year they were 100, like, they were 100 points team every year. They usually won a round. They had like a four or five year stretch where they won a round every season. They were a dominant team in a totally different category than this one. Now, Quinn Hughes, I think, clearly, but I just would prefer to give more precedence to that golden era, especially given that I think you can argue that between the defensive value and the peak production at 5-on-5 that Burrows managed, and the iconic goals and the Dragon Slayer goal and the game two overtime winner in the Stanley Cup final. I just think Burrows is a more important part of the most important era in Canucks history to this point. You can't tell the story of it without him. So for me, it was clear that he should be on this team.
I mean, look, I'm never going to push back too much on some Alex Burrows praise because, yeah, he was awesome. Yeah. And if you're going to take one of these guys off, that certainly would be the candidate for me. But I think that point about the quality of those teams, like, that goes a long way to explaining Alex Edler on the first team as well. So for some people that might be surprised, right? Or like, hey, where's Ed Jovanovski? Alex Edler was a rock. Like, if first or, you know, a number one or number two defenseman on those teams year after year after year on the power play with them, right? Playing big minutes, stepping up in the playoffs. He was a monster for those teams. So I think maybe some people are remembering like the latter 4 or 5 years of Alex Edler's tenure in Vancouver where he wasn't on very good teams. And, you know, because the team is not very good, he gets in the spotlight for turnovers or whatever, or missed plays. But man, when the team was good, he was a huge, huge part of that. And then you just look at the longevity and how much he played for the team. And there's no real question to me
about Alex Edler. Say stuff like, oh, well, he wasn't a 100-point player. And it's like, yeah, but it doesn't mean what it meant. Daniel Sedin won the Art Ross Trophy with 103 points.
Yeah.
Right? JT Miller was like, what, 10th in NHL scoring at 103 points. Like, it's different. It's different. If you're a top five goal scorer, 5-on-5 across a 250-game sample, I weight that more highly than, hey, every other season he's near the top 10 in NHL scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that matters to me. So that's why I'd say Burrows' peak was higher, not to mention his defensive play is probably the best defensive forward other than Ryan Kessler in franchise history, frankly.
I think also there's at least one person who maybe is like purposely misunderstanding the point of the exercise. They're like, how is Alex McGillney left off the roster? It's like, well, he played like 30 games in the 99-2000 season for them. So I think that explains it.
There's some Todd Bertuzzi. Get it. Todd Bertuzzi's a difficult omission.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Some Sammy Salo love.
Sammy Salo. So
that's a tough one, too.
Bieksa over Salo and Jovanovski was a tough one. I ultimately looked at it, thought about it at length, and what really put Bieksa over the top for me was if you go look at that 2012-13 season where he was the number one ice time defenseman for a President's Trophy-winning team, was, like, second in the entire NHL in 5-on-5 scoring for a defenseman. Like, I think that's one of the five most impressive individual seasons by a Canucks defenseman in franchise history, and the other four are by a certain gentleman named Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
So that put him over the top, even though I think Jovo and Salo would have been credible candidates, and I consider them strong.
All right, we got to do a quick rumor roundup in the broadsheet here.
Oh, man, and I really skipped that.
We were referencing it earlier in the show, but on the Spit and Chicklets podcast today, Paul Bissonnette relates a story. Apparently, he was spending some time in Vancouver and Victoria over the weekend, over the last few days, as he says, was at dinner at an Aquilini-owned restaurant, runs into Francesco Aquilini, the owner of the Canucks, on his way to the bathroom, and basically gave some advice to Aquilini, saying, don't trade Miller for a light package. For example, like Filip Hedl in a first-round pick and maybe Ryan Lindgren, wait until the offseason when maybe there will be more teams interested, maybe a little bit easier to move that player. But Bissonnette very much stressing, don't just give away this asset, this player, for nothing because you're in a pinch right now. Now, Bissonnette, I should also note, says that he's heard that JT Miller has asked for a trade. Now, of course, we've heard repeated denials from that, right? Rick Dhaliwal has said many times.
Yeah.
He's talked to the agent.
Specifically
the agent denies
from
it.
His yeah. agent, Brian Bartlett. So, but Biz has been pretty out front mm-hmm. on this file.
Now, this also does remind me a little bit of from last year, the Connor
Biz
Garland.
Has definitely been a housewife of North Van with how on top of this story he's been, well ahead of the market.
Remember the Connor Garland trade request, not real trade request from the beginning of last year? And at some point, there is kind of a semantic thing where it's like, maybe you didn't initiate and go and say, I want to be traded, and it caught management by surprise that you were making a trade demand. But it could be like a mutual thing, you know, and that's just speculation here. But that's kind of what it turned out to be, I think, in Connor Garland's situation. It was like, well, if you're trying to trade me, okay, I can help out. My agent can help out, even though I'm not requesting a trade. So I don't know. That's just my kind of read on the situation.
But the semantics of have they requested a trade or is there an understanding or
exactly.
what have you? Like,
ultimately, not that important. Everyone seems to understand where it's going.
Correct.
Yeah. So there you go.
But fantastic intel. And we'll get more into Bissonnette's opinion being solicited by the owner of the team at his restaurant.
Yes, we
fantastic.
Will. Some other things to run through quickly here. Andy Strickland on the Cam and Strick podcast.
I also want to solicit Bissonnette's opinion, by the way, on how to market my new alcohol product.
There you go.
And how to lose weight.
All good things.
Yeah.
All great things to
and
ask
how to
Biz
podcast
about.
Well.
Yes, that would be great. How to grow our podcasting audience.
How do I podcast good?
Can you help us out here, Biz? Andy Strickland on the Cam and Strick podcast says, look out for Carolina when it comes to JT Miller. He says, I think Carolina has a lot of interest. They feel like they have the necessary leadership and coaching to handle JT Miller's personality. So another insider out there bringing up Carolina as a potential destination, as a team that might be interested in JT Miller. Chris Johnston saying the Canucks still talking to multiple teams. Rangers, Devils, Carolina, all among them. And CJ notes that they're all Eastern United States-based teams, which we've heard might be one of the criteria that JT Miller's using to decide if he wants to waive his no trade. Rick Dhaliwal saying it's going to take some time, but they're still talking to teams. Quote, this is still very real. So there's the roundup. Very real. Carolina talking to lots of teams as the Canucks try to move JT Miller.
Yeah, and next segment. We'll do like a whole bit on sort
we'll
of the waiting game
absolutely.
That we are living in at the moment.
Quick lineup notes. Demko looks like he's going to start. That will be three in
Did
a
Tocchet
row
confirm
for
that?
Him. I'd have to check, but I haven't seen anyone not confirming it.
I don't know. I'm not sure because Lankanen didn't really skate or take the optional. He hasn't been skating on game days. Now, Demko didn't stay on very long. So I want to hear the Tocchet audio.
Okay, we'll see. Possibly Demko starting, and if he does, it would be three in a row for Thatcher Demko. And then quick playoff and standings update. The Canucks had a 76% chance to make the playoffs in Dom's model. That's a little bit down from yesterday.
Utah
and St. Louis both win last night.
Wow, yeah, St. Louis, don't worry about them. Utah, though. Utah looking real nice last night. That Logan Cooley goal, did you see it?
No. Oh.
Logan Cooley Sick. Rush goal, jersey flapping behind him, looking like a young Mike Modano. Scary. Scary stuff from the Utah Hockey Club. The Canucks, by the way, up to minus 170 to make the playoffs, or actually down to minus 170 to make the playoffs. However, the teams chasing them are all 2.5 or more to 1. So Canucks still heavily favored, even if the futures odds don't reflect like them being sort of a cinch. Minus 185 tonight. On the money line, heavily favored over a Buffalo Sabres team. That's plus 155 on the money line. Buffalo Sabres, of course, played yesterday and played poorly down the I-5 against the Seattle Kraken. Over-under set at 6.
All right, that's the whiteboard for today. We will take a break, and we'll dive in a little bit more, as you said, Dranson, to the situation the Canucks find themselves in, the waiting game.
Talk confirmed, Demko says the inbox, which I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to trust
Can we trust the inbox?
Yes.
I think we can. All right. Talkett has confirmed that Thatcher Demko is starting. All right, we'll take a break here. More Canucks talk on the other side here on Sportsnet 650.